Hey, it's Dave Player back with you on 720 WGN. So Steve Darnall discovered the golden age of radio at age of 12 while listening to Chuck Shaden's Those Were the Days, a weekly show looking back at the simpler times, the happy days, the golden years of old-time radio and beyond, which he has now hosted himself for the past 8 years. Now, Steve took over as publisher and editor of Nostalgia Digest magazine back in 2004, and joining me tonight to talk about the winter edition of the magazine that I always look forward to, talking about comedians Eve Arden and Gail Gordon, performers that risked their lives in World War II, the legacy of Chicago's lakefront, and much more. Steve Darnall, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good, David. How are you?
I am fabulous, as I always say, when I see that edition of the magazine coming in. I get very excited, just like I did as a kid getting that little TV guide in the mail. No, I absolutely love it, and it's a great read.
So
always
glad.
Entertaining, educational, because it always tells me stories and history that I've just never heard of before.
Well, I'm glad for that. I mean, it's always I get the same feeling putting it together when you realize you have this article about Gail Gordon and Eve Arden, and you have this article about Henry Fonda, and this one about Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt, and it's like, wow.
It's a variety. It's a nice mix every single time that it comes out.
Nostalgia is a very broad umbrella, and I always figure that if we can catch someone with one article, we'll do it, and if we don't, we'll catch them with the next one.
We're fairly young. In 30 years when we're talking about this, are we going to be talking about the Fonz? Are we ever going to dip that far, or is it really about an era?
I think it's about an era.
Yeah, right?
I mean, I no disrespect to baby boomers, but I think their likes and dislikes have been fairly well chronicled.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I think, you know, I always say the analogy I use, David, is that there's absolutely nobody left from the Civil War, but we still read magazines about that.
Right, exactly.
And
again, it's a great magazine, comes out four times a year. The cover of this edition is Eve Arden, right up there.
Holding up the microphone.
If you're
here.
Watching, exactly. Eve Arden and Gail Gordon. And generations know these people from, it depends what generation you're talking to. So Eve Arden, if you grew up in the 40s and 50s, you remember her from obviously Our Miss Brooks and Gail Gordon from Our Miss Brooks. If you grew up in the 60s and 70s, you might know Eve Arden from Grease.
Sure.
You might know Gail Gordon from all the Lucy shows and so forth. So it depends on really when you grew up, you know, how all these came to play.
Yeah. And Eve Arden, of course, before Our Miss Brooks, she was in, you know, Stage Door and Cover Girl and The Kid from Brooklyn. Gail Gordon did all kinds of things in radio and Fibber McGee and Molly and whatnot. Yeah, all these people have fascinating careers, and it's sort of like, for the most part, if you look at any one of them and the thing that made them famous, you can also find all the things they did before or after that, and those are equally interesting.
True, absolutely. And Our Miss Brooks, one of the few programs that was a radio show, then simultaneously a television show.
That's right.
And then a movie. But then the radio show continued. Like, it began it and it ended it.
That's true. I think the radio show even outlasted the television show.
It did, which is very rare. Yeah.
Very true. Yeah. And just one of the most well-written shows, too, in radio, and one of the best cast shows. I mean, you talk about Gail Gordon, who, of course, was brilliant in everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Jeff Chandler as Philip Boynton, the biology teacher, and Dick Crenna, and a Chicago-area actor, Leonard Smith, who I adore because he played the role of Stretch Snodgrass, the star athlete at Madison High School who was thick as a plank.
Yeah.
And just absolutely, he was that show's secret weapon, I thought. And I got to talk to him last year about that. And one of my favorite moments with him is when Stretch was upset with Principal Conklin, and he announced to Miss Brooks that some of the students are hanging Principal Conklin in a figgy.
In a figgy.
Brilliant stuff. And yes, to be able to chronicle some of that and maybe remind people of what it was that made it special.
But when I've heard it on your show and on our radio theater on this station, it's always timeless. Like, you listen to the Jack Bennies, also, I believe, very timeless. There's some shows, as you know, are very indicative of the period and they're a little harder to connect to.
Sure.
But this one, whether you're watching or listening to it on radio or you're watching it on television, is still very funny and very relatable. And I was looking at some history of the show. They were first looking for Shirley Booth to play this role.
That's right. They recorded an audition
with Shirley Booth. And then they also thought about Lucille Ball, but she was already committed to My Favorite Husband at that point. And she won some Emmys and stuff for this show, too.
She did. And as I recall, the thing that convinced Eve Arden to do it was that she could pre-record everything.
Right.
Which
right,
I love, exactly. Which she couldn't have done 2 or 3 years earlier.
Right. And then Gail Gordon. And this is my favorite story because we inducted Gail into the Radio Hall of Fame some years ago.
That's right.
It's one of the few awards that we have in our possession. I think it's Gail's and Howard Stern that we have in our possession. Although
I figured those two had something in common.
Although in talking to Gary Meyer, actually, Gary might bring Howard's award to him because they're friends, and he goes up to New York all the time, so he might bring it out and finally give it to him. But Gail's one of those ones that his wife died just a few months before him, and he didn't have a lot of family. He had no children, and so we still have – that's one of the few awards that we still have. But here's a guy you talk about classic. You know, he started working with Lucy, I think, in My Favorite Husband, right?
Yeah, well, as a matter of fact, this I didn't know this till fairly recently. There was, in the 1930s, Jack Haley, mm-hmm. Who was the Tin Man in The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
He had his own show with Lucille Ball as a foil and Gail Gordon as his announcer.
Oh, okay.
But beyond that, you're right. The first time really people thought, oh, Gail Gordon, the actor, and Lucille Ball, the actress.
Yeah.
My Favorite Husband, absolutely.
But he did a ton of stuff on radio, obviously, before that. He did Dennis the Menace. He did...
he was Fibber McGee and Molly. He was Mayor LaTrivia.
Yeah, he was all over the radio, but it was, Mayor LaTrivia. And then, not that I'm verifying that with you, but yes, I had that written down here.
That's all right. You've got notes. I'm not tall enough to read over your shoulder.
He was also considered for a William Frawley's role on I Love Lucy, and he was already committed to other
Armis
series.
Armis Brooks.
So here's a guy that, of course, was on Mr. Mooney on The Lucy Show. Probably Mr. Mooney's probably the big, besides Conklin, is the biggest name that he's associated with. Let's listen to just a little bit of Gail and Eve on Armis Brooks.
Walter, you know this won't work. Mr. Conklin's upset enough as it is without your...
I'm sorry, Miss Brooks. This thing is bigger than Mr. Conklin. Let me look out the window a minute while I collect my thoughts. That's what Daniel Webster always did before he made a speech. As I look out upon the hallowed grounds of our beloved school, I can't help thinking of the principles upon which it was founded.
Well, you sound like Daniel Webster, all right, but you look like Betsy Ross. You better take off that dress, Walter, or Mr. Conklin...
Good morning, Miss Brooks.
Mr. Conklin.
I was just passing by and wondered if you'd done anything about these outfits. Snodgrass.
Yes, Mr. Conklin?
What's the meaning of that outlandish turban?
It's just to cover up a cut, Mr. Conklin. I tied it too tight, but I'll take it off as soon as I can get the knots out.
I'll see that you do. And who's this over by the window? Now, there's a little girl who knows how to dress for school. A simple black frock with nice green braid trim. What's your name, dear? Come. I won't bite. Now, turn around. There. Now, what's your name?
Walter Denton.
I see. Well, that's a lovely dress you have on, Walter. I wish some of us... That's a lovely dress you have on, Walter!
Oh, that voice.
I know.
One thing about Walter, he looks good in anything he wears.
That voice is just amazing.
The Gail Gordon blow-up is like nothing else on radio or television.
Well, I was reading something about he described himself as the most easygoing man in the world, and he has really no temper, but... The way that would build, this is a story that I found online that he encountered a woman outside the studio who said, say something nasty to me. And he said, madam, you know, in his haughtiness, you know, he said, I am never nasty unless I get paid for it. You know, classic Gail Gordon. I'm going to play a little bit of Gail and Lucy.
Oh, you know, the bank has gone to great expense to build that vault. The sand hogs have been working day and night. If I'd known it was going to be so expensive, I never would have approved of it. We have just got to get Mr. Benny's account.
Now, don't worry, we will. Besides, it was my idea. I will take the responsibility. If it doesn't work, you can fire me.
Oh, I almost wish it wouldn't work.
His voice, and by the way, that was the post-smoking Lucy.
Yes.
Mr. Moody, I got a question for you. Exactly. He had done, by the time he was drafted into the Army in World War II, I was reading this, Gordon had done more than 5,000 radio performances and was appearing on over 35 shows.
I believe
That's amazing, wow. Right?
Yes. Well, going back, and I think in his case, he was one of those who really started out in the 20s. You know, he told the story about going to some California station with his ukulele.
Yeah.
To play, you know, It Ain't Gonna Rain No More.
Yeah.
And, yeah, from there, the floodgates open. And, in fact, I know presumably later on we're going to be featuring a clip of him from a very different kind
of
show.
Yeah, yeah, which he was Flash Gordon. Which
he was Flash
When you
Gordon.
Said that to me in an email this week, I was like, I had no idea.
No.
Because I associated him with comedy. Let's take a little listen to that, Flash Gordon.
Last, Azora, I have you in my power.
Let go of me, Flash Gordon. How dare you lay hands on me in this manner?
You've caused me all the trouble you're going to, Azora. Come along. Down this way.
Let me go. Stop. Where are you taking me?
I'm going to take you where Zarkov and Dale are out in the hiding.
Oh.
Then maybe I can handle Tall and those soldiers of yours. With you out of the way, they may listen to reason.
My soldiers will fight to the last man to save me and the Blue Magic Land.
We'll have a good chance to see how true that is. Yep. Come along.
No.
We've no time to lose.
Don't. Dare take me up in your arms. You.
And only a little while ago, you were begging me to.
But then I thought you loved me.
How diverse is this guy, right?
That's the beauty of radio, Dave, as you know. It doesn't really, you know, it doesn't matter what you look like, whether you're slight of build or have a mustache or a beard or no hair at all.
Yeah.
If you can sound like Flash Gordon.
The three of us sitting in here, yes.
Or Mr. Mooney, Principal Conklin, you can do it.
It's too late to cover up the cameras, unfortunately. In here.
Yes, it is, the glow. We apologize for the glow that's coming off our heads.
It's a turban renewal.
Yeah, exactly. And he did some films, too, but and he was working with Lucy into his 80s. He died in like late 1998, I think is what
I think
it was.
So, but yes, he was on Lucy's last show, the Life 1987 show, which I could not quite bring myself to watch.
But
I
he was still great in it. Though.
He was still great.
It just wasn't
the
right
little
time.
Known, and I know this is off the subject, but little known fact about that is one of the children who worked on that show was a girl named Jenny Lewis.
Oh, okay, one of the kids. Yeah.
Yes, and today, of course, she was the singer for Rilo Kiley, and she's had a terrific solo career as well.
Yeah,
so
look at that. I'll look that up.
Amazing but true, folks.
I love that. And then all kinds of other things in the book, in the Nostalgia Digest magazine, performers who risked their lives in World War II. I think sometimes we forget, because a lot of us didn't live in that era, that a lot of the musicians, the actors, the performers left. They were gone for years in the war.
Absolutely.
Or entertaining in the war. They were either serving or entertaining.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, there were plenty of people. Bob Hope, of course, would do his radio show from Army camps, and Jack Benioff and did the same thing. But there were folks who went overseas. There were folks, Al Jolson was one of the first to sign up, and then he got malaria. Carol Lombard, of course, was selling war bonds. And, in fact, it was 75 years ago this last week that she was on a war bond tour and was killed in a plane crash, you know.
Wow.
And really the first sort of celebrity casualty of the war, ironically. But, yes, it was a time when the stakes were enormous and everyone was aware of how enormous they were and came together to combat that.
Well, there's a Kraft Music Hall, which was Bing Crosby for a lot of that time, that you're airing next weekend. That it was 75 years ago this month in World War II, Japanese forces captured Manila, capital of the Philippines. And you note that General MacArthur asked that this specific episode be broadcast to the soldiers in the Philippines to boost morale.
Yes. And of course,
because that's what this was all for, really.
Yeah.
And back then it was shortwave radio, too, which, of course, is notoriously unreliable.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm thrilled, you know, like I say, to get to cover these subjects, and particularly with the 75th anniversary of the war, these are things that deserve to be revisited.
Henry Fonda, Edgar Allan Poe on radio, and then Lennox Lore and the Chicago's Lakefront Legacy. That's another feature this month.
Yes, our friend Jim Doran sent us this article, and Lennox Lore, for those who don't know, was the president of the Museum of Science and Industry for about 30 years. He was certainly responsible for a lot of the development along Lakeshore Drive in terms of McCormick Place and the museum.
Sure.
But also he worked on the Century of Progress in the 1930s. It's just a tremendous life and career. And yeah, that's one of the things about the Digest that thrills me, is the fact that we can put something like that, which only tangentially relates to entertainment, but which is still very, I think, a valuable piece of Chicago history and, as a result, part of American history.
And again, very all kinds of great articles in Nostalgia Digest magazine. It's the winter edition with Steve Darnall. Wednesday player on 720 WGN. We're talking about the Nostalgia Digest Winter Edition with Steve Darnell. What is this, the Flat Five?
The Flat Five.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about the Flat Five.
Oh, they're just a tremendous group from around these parts. A couple of guys from NRBQ, marvelous Nora O'Connor and Kelly Hogan, who've both sung with the Decemberists, and Kelly's sung with Nico Case and Mavis Staples. And they've just done this tremendous album of songs by my friend Chris Legan, who is a tremendously gifted songwriter. I cannot recommend
it. It's a cool album. Yeah,
it's
you gave
a world
it to me for
of
Christmas.
Love and
I appreciate
hope.
That.
I cannot
yeah.
recommend it highly enough.
Yeah, very cool, the Flat Five. Couple things I want to wrap up with. Nostalgia Digest magazine, and we'll talk about this before we go too, but where can we get this?
You can find it at a number of stores nationwide, but more directly through nostalgiadigest.com. And, of course, you can also call to subscribe. Our office number is 773-769-6575. But if you go to nostalgiadigest.com, you don't have to call anybody at 3:30 in the morning.
That's right. Exactly. That's right. And on your show that you do, it's always Jack Benny Month, which you feature in the magazine.
February is Jack Benny Month,
because
yes.
he would have been 128, I think, or something like, right?
I got to do
Tell
the math.
Tell me, Joey, will you? Do the math.
Jack born Benny, in 1894.
Okay, there you go.
Yes, this was a tradition that Chuck Shaden, the founder of Those Were the Days, began back in 1979, which means that this year, appropriately, is the 39th
Jack
Benny
month.
Oh,
that's important. If you know Jack Benny, 39 is...
Exactly.
It's his perennial age.
It's our first annual 39th Jack Benny month. Yeah. And yeah, in fact, we've got some great stuff lined up involving Jack and World War II, and also Chuck Shaden, who did a marvelous sort of oral history of the Jack Benny program, and we'll be featuring that on our program as well.
He interviewed him. That was one of his first interviews,
Yes, he interviewed a lot of people with the Benny Show. Dennis Day and Don Wilson and Phil
but
Harris.
But to sit down with Jack Benny, I remember he told me how nervous he was to do
and
that
yes,
interview.
Chuck hadn't been on the air more than 6 months.
Right. And that's one of your first big interviews.
And Jack Benny was funny. I talked to his daughter a few years back.
Yeah. I was there. Was that at the...
Well, that's right. We did that at the museum.
Yeah, at the museum, Broadcast
And then
museum.
We interviewed her for one of our podcasts. Yeah. And I suggested to her that listening to the interview he did with Chuck Shaden, Jack was not particularly nostalgically minded.
No.
You know, it's sort of like you listen
no,
to any...
No, because he was still doing it.
Right. You know. If you listen to any interview with Jack and they talk about his radio career and he will just sort of like, well, that's, I guess, what I said or I did, you know.
Yeah, right.
Basically, whatever you guys say.
Yeah. That's funny. Now, you do a bunch of appearances around town and talk about all kinds of things. First of all, I love this because it's about teaching people about, it's kind of like a beginner's guide to the golden age of radio, but you also talk about America's songbook. One of the first things you got coming up is January 29th on a Sunday, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, Indian Prairie Public Library in Darien, Radio and the Great American Songbook.
Yes. Some years ago, we started going to libraries and talking about the early years of radio and bringing some sound clips. And one library said, well, we have this summer program devoted to the Great American Songbook. Can you do something about that?
And tying it together.
I said, absolutely. So we decided, you know, I found these clips of songwriters like Cole Porter and George Gershwin heard on the radio. And it's been quite wonderful because, I mean, the audience knows these people by and large.
Yeah, you get a nice group in there.
Yes. And at one point, we actually do a sing-along with Cole Porter. And I
That's
always
cool.
figure, if you can go home and say, I sang a duet with Cole Porter, you've had a pretty fulfilling day. But it's been great fun. And great fun, too, to just meet what you presume to be your audience.
Sure. Well, then, and Sunday, February 12th, also in the afternoon, in Winnetka, at the Winnetka Public Library, A Beginner's Guide to Golden Age of Radio.
Yes, which focuses on some of the big shows and the big stars, you know, Benny and The Shadow and Bob Hope.
But if you haven't listened to it, and you bring, you know, this is a great place to honestly bring kids, bring grandkids to kind of understand it, because that's just an era gone by that people don't understand that that's how you were entertained in the home. There was no TV. There was no iPhone. There was no nothing.
No.
You listened as a family.
Oh, yeah. One of the things about the presentation we're giving in Darien next Sunday is that we talk about the fact that, you know, a century ago, before radio, the only way most of us could listen to music was by standing next to somebody playing an instrument.
Yeah, right.
And you just think, that's why people bought pianos and instruments, and that's why they bought sheet music, so they could play the songs of the day.
Right.
It's been great fun, and you know, all roads lead to nostalgia and Nostalgia Digest, and sure. But it is, it's great fun to get out and talk about these things and you know, spread the seed, as it were.
And then upcoming appearances in Riverside and Streamwood, Elmhurst and Bridgeview over the next couple months as well. And to find all of his appearances and also to get a subscription of Nostalgia Digest magazine, you want to go to nostalgiadigest.com. And the phone number again?
773-769-6575.
Always fun to have you on, my friend.
Thank you, David.
Steve Darnell. All right, news is, oh, no, wait. Roger, good morning.
Oh, good.
You made it back upstairs. You made it back upstairs. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Took a while. I left my walker out
Roger
in the hallway.
Roger, bless his heart, he came down to say hello, and I really appreciated that. And I didn't get to say much more than two words to you, Roger, but thank you for coming down. It's good to see you.
Well, I love listening to you guys, to you do your show when I'm out and about getting groceries on Saturdays. I've got you guys tuned in. And love the programs,
especially
when you do the tributes. When you put a couple of the like a single art, like a Benny marathon or something like that.
A focus,
yeah,
a theme show. Yeah,
yeah. I've been a big fan for a long, 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 long time. And David knows my affinity for old time radio. I used to teach it for 20 years in high schools.
Oh my.
And we actually recorded a bunch of old shows. The kids would produce the whole thing,
cool.
act in it, put the sound effects together with the music, and I just love it.
It's a great thing to see it happen, too.
Yeah.
David
and
I got to do
I'm on a hiatus right now with the After SAG group. Mm. I've performed in a number of shows with them, but I've been on hiatus now for about a year because of issues and with health issues and stuff, but hoping to get back to it as we get into the new year.
Well, and the Digest, a great extension of that.
Oh, again,
NostalgiaDigest.com. All right, 333, Roger's got the latest.